What I think Chick-fil-A did well, and mind you, you know, I'm the most open-minded person that you know, support all types of rights, everything. Chick-fil-A was like, you know, we're not down with the gay shit. They're very clear on that with where they put their money or where they'll take their money away.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to Amazing Marketing Show. I'm Dmitry Smirnov here with my co-host, Chris Gray. What's going on today?
Dmitry, what up, man? How you doing, brother?
I'm doing excellent, and I'm excited for this episode because we're going to do another thing that's different since we are just starting out with this and we're exploring different ideas. But what we're doing this time is looking at marketing campaigns, big and small, industries that you know about, industries that you don't, and we're just going to analyze them, look at them, and then try to figure out how can we and you, the listeners, can apply what we're seeing both from emotions and data perspectives to your businesses and your marketing. And I think this will help. I'm hoping to get something out of this for myself and for our clients internally at my agency. What do you think?
I love it. It falls in line with what we talked about in our very first episode with talking about riding trends. And you look at what's working, you take it, make your own version of it. So I think it's dope to find campaigns that are working and talk about the math and emotions behind that, and even, maybe even campaigns that failed and what happened with that. So I am digging it.
Okay, well, I want to start with this industry that we all know about and likely drive by every single day and probably are tempted, if not actually go in on the drive-thru or go into these restaurants and eat there. I want to talk about fast food chains. There are so many different fast food chains and they market differently. They have different foods. They probably make you feel a certain different way. And just first off, what do you think about fast food in general?
I think it's disgusting. I can't believe I used to eat it, man. You know, you bring up fast food and prior to my wife, me and my roommate would crush it. We'd be eating fast food, right? Come back from the bar 2-3 a.m. eating fast food, this and that. Now that I eat it, I'm like, it's disgusting. But with that said, there are times, rarities where I have to eat fast food, whether it's a big, long, like road trip or something like that. And the brand name most definitely impacts the fast food joint that I stop at, if I stop at all.
So I'm looking at the data right now on fast food restaurants, and I gotta be honest, I'm surprised. This is the first time seeing this, and I would bet that you're not gonna guess it because I wouldn't, but maybe you will. So what do you think are the top fast food chains by volume, or by number of locations, in the U.S.
So fast food chains by number of locations, these fast food chains are essentially just real estate businesses. And so the biggest one would have to be McDonald's. If I had to pick the top three, I'd say McDonald's, Chick-fil-A, and then some pizza chain, let's say Domino's.
So that's what I would think too. And that apparently is completely off because the number one fast food brand by location, number of locations in the U.S. is Subway.
What?
Subway sandwiches with over 20,000 locations, followed by Starbucks, which I guess counts as one of these, followed by McDonald's at only 13,000 locations. Then Dunkin' Donuts, then Taco Bell.
Man, it kind of makes sense. I see these Subway commercials, and they are not light on celebrities. Like, in one commercial, I remember seeing, like, Stephen Curry and Charles Barkley was doing the voiceover, and then they had Tom Brady and maybe A-Rod or something. I'm like, how in the hell is Subway coming up with this type of marketing money? So I guess, you know, they're crushing it in the real estate game.
Yeah, they kind of have a really interesting marketing story, right? Because they do have a ton of celebrities. They have athletes, actors, and so on. Then they had their $5 footlong for a while that I think was really successful, at least from a marketing campaign. I doubt that they were making any margin on those sandwiches. And I don't think the $5 footlong exists anymore. They had the big scandal with Jared. So that hurt, but nevertheless, they're first. And now looking at their sales of Subway restaurants in the United States from 2015 to 2022, falling pretty linearly from $11.5 billion in 2015 down to $8 billion in 2020. Now COVID, I'm sure, affected it, but it was kind of linear drop. But since then, going back up. And I'm curious to find the data before that, but I don't know, pretty stable, I suppose.
I wonder when did the stuff go down with Jared? Was it between 2015 and 2020? I cannot recall. So I'm interested in wondering if that really hurt them or not. Or I'm interested in discovering if it hurt them or not.
Yeah. I'm going to look that up, but what do you think of when you hear Subway? Like, how does Subway make you feel based on all their marketing that they've seen, all the celebrities that they use? I'm sure you've been to the restaurant a time or two. Like, what does Subway mean to you?
I mean, a shitty sandwich. I don't think much of Subway, just like I don't think much of McDonald's or these other places. I think that they do a good job of just general branding and things like that. But I don't have any thoughts on the Subway sandwich other than it's a subpar sandwich.
Yeah. Okay. So the date is 2015. So I'm going to try to look at the revenue prior to 2015. And it's also showing that 2023 has been a record year in revenues. Now, looking at revenues, Subway is not number one, and they're not even close. So what that tells me is that their revenue per store is quite low relative to their competitors. I think the revenue per store is the highest with Chick-fil-A, even though they're closed one day a week on Sundays, which would be probably one of the bigger days of sales.
That's interesting. So then when you, I know you're looking up the Subway stuff here, but a question, like, when I say Chick-fil-A, what do you think? And then when I say like Subway, what do you think?
Chick-fil-A, I think easy drive-through, friendly service, chicken that's consistent, I guess. It's not going to make me sick, I don't think. And I'm okay with eating it every now and then, maybe a couple times a year on a trip or something. I have pretty positive feelings about Chick-fil-A. I also think their marketing is cute, where they have the cows saying eat more chicken. It's kind of dark if you really think about it, but it's kind of cute. When I think of Subway, I think used to be good, used to be worth it during the $5 footlong days. Haven't been there in years. Don't plan on ever going there. Would rather skip a meal than go to Subway.
Yeah, I don't even know if their chicken is even chicken. Like, when I used to get the chicken sandwich, it's like, what kind of chicken breast meat is this? Anyways, with Chick-fil-A, one thing that stands out to me with them is, yeah, I'm with you. They feel like a more upper, I guess it might be an oxymoron, but upscale fast food, right? It seems more at the higher end of fast food. But also, what I think Chick-fil-A did well is, and mind you, I'm the most open-minded person that you know, support all types of rights, everything. Chick-fil-A was like, you know, we're not down with the gay shit. And they're very clear on that with where they put their money or where they'll take their money away. And I think by doing that, yes, it's offensive. My wife stopped eating Chick-fil-A when she found out how active they are with moving against the LGBTQ, whatever letter I'm missing, community. She stopped eating it. But it didn't hurt their sales. I think by them drawing that line in the sand, your Christian conservative person who may have some more money, who's like, yo, they're not open on Sundays because it's God's day. They're not supporting homosexuality. I'm eating all the Chick-fil-A I can.
That's an interesting point. So do you think that it's important to state all your values as a company or even as a personal brand? Are you wanting to only have people that agree with your values or other statements about you to work with you or eat at your restaurant or whatever the business that you're in? Do you only want those people?
I think that that is an excellent way to go about setting yourself apart. An example would be another example of this. Let's look at the Ku Klux Klan and Nazis. Obviously, I can't agree with them, right? Just by default, we are at odds. But their little group, their club, whatever it is, like, you know their brand. For good or bad, right? And we would say generally it's a bad brand, something you don't want to be associated with. But if it was so terrible, they would be dead. They're not dead. Klan still exists. Nazi still exists. Why? Because that brand attracts somebody. By them repelling and saying, hey, we're not down with this, that, and the other, there's some other people out there that fit their criteria. They're like, yeah, I'm not down with that shit either. And I'm coming your way. So much so, man, that the Nazis at one point, not the Nazis, the Klan, like the Klan leader at one point was bringing in, I think, $2.8 million a year, man. The Grand Wizard was banking, making money. So you have this very negative perception, something that nobody wants to be associated with publicly, right? Nobody's going to go on radio, go on TV, say, hey, I'm down with the Klan or whatever. I don't know why it does that shit still. Anyways, but give
you a thumbs up for that.
It give me a thumbs up. Yeah. But that negative outlook works for the Klan. They're still making money, still surviving.
Well, I don't know how much they are making money nowadays, or at least relative to what they could be making had they had a different message. So they've at least from an organization perspective, they've fallen behind the times and their influence, and I'm sure their gross annual revenues have dropped almost to zero at this point. So they kind of screwed up from they didn't really adjust to the times if they really wanted to stick around. Now, not that I'm arguing for them to stick around. I'm just saying it seems like they went out on a limb at a certain point that where it served a purpose, but ultimately it led to their downfall. And for the leaders and the people who are making money off of this, maybe they would have been better off trying to change the messaging so that it could keep up with the times and they wouldn't be obsolete at this point.
I don't know. I don't know if they. So maybe like the Klan, they're not running around putting crosses in my yard wearing white hoodies, right? At least not to the extent that they once were. But they might be running around under, you know, same ideology under different names. And in some ways, moving smarter. Let me give you an example. This was a long time ago. I met this one cat, real smart dude. Going to be a lawyer or something. And he got approached. He met some cat, ends up hanging out with their friends, having beers or whatever. And then over time, they start liking him. They start recruiting him. What this organization would do is they was all white men, can only be white men, white men operating at a high level, particularly in government. And what they were trying to do was attack other races or other ideologies through that. So they're not running around wearing white hoods and making a big spectacle. They're wearing a suit, looking like the everyday person, but they get themselves in high positions where they could have influence. And they're recruiting other people like that. This is like the clan, but smarter, moving different, and pulling in money. So I'm not sure if it's gone. I think it just might look different.
Okay, but is this still sounds like that you're arguing that you have to be polarizing in order to build an influence and speak to your audience and get raving fans effectively.
I'm saying being polarizing works.
Wouldn't you agree that there's people out there that aren't really polarizing, at least from a personal brand perspective, like Oprah, The Rock, Tom Hanks, who are kind of beloved by everyone, and they're the biggest stars in the world?
Yes, and people love to see those types of people fall. They like, as soon as they can see a crack, and somebody who was supposed, let's look at your Tiger Woods, was loved by everybody. And as soon as there was a crack, boy, the media and press just went and dove in. And it was all over the news. Yes, you can be loved by everyone, but you can be loved by everybody, that could be your brand. And even still, they will try to eat you as soon as they can. So why not come out the gates and be like, if you were Tiger Woods, not saying he would, but why not come out the gates and be like, yo, shit, I don't know, I have two wives. I had a threesome yesterday. Like, why not just come out the gates and own that?
I don't think that he would have been better off doing that. I think that he wouldn't have gotten, let's say, the video game deals necessarily. He wouldn't have gotten quite the TV ratings because he would have polarized half the audience, let's say, even though the other half might love him even more. But in terms of TV ratings and buying video games, it's like kind of irrelevant at that point. What I'm trying to say is there's a certain point where the marginal utility of somebody loving you even more is diminishing. And it doesn't make sense for you to take that risk or go out and say something polarizing because you're just going to lose half your fans.
Yeah, you're right. Like Nike and EA Sports, if they're still around or whatever, they can't get behind somebody going out there saying all kinds of crazy shit. Yes, I agree. There's a way to do it. Let's look at Trump. You're not on the fence with Trump. He went and said that he grabbed women by the you know what, and he still won the presidency, bro. Like that would have broke most other people. He still won. He'll come out and he said something to the effect, I'm not doing the quote justice, that he can go shoot somebody in broad daylight and still get votes. Trump is polarizing, and he's done it in a manner that, I mean, shoot, he became president off of that, right? Screw your Nike endorsement. I'm president of the United States, man. Like, there's a way to do it. Maybe you can't come out and just say, I had a threesome with blah, blah, blah yesterday, like I was saying with Tiger Woods. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying there's a way to polarize and win.
Yeah, and it's a risky move, though, to polarize. Looking at, for example, in boxing, for some reason, maybe I was listening to a podcast about Muhammad Ali and how polarizing he was at the time. And he's considered to be the greatest boxer of all time, I think in part because of how polarizing he was and that aura that he built around himself and just in his status. But it was a risky move. Like it could have fallen apart for him. He could have been banned. He could have been blacklisted. Fortunately, he wasn't. And so I guess it depends on your risk tolerance of how polarizing can you actually be and how much hate can you take. But like going back to Oprah again, if she took a polarizing view on something right now, would that help her in any way? I don't think so.
I don't know. I mean, she's already kind of built her. I don't know, man. It's hard for me to answer because she's not as relevant as she once was, let's say, in the 90s or early 2000s.
That's a good point. But then let's say coming back to Trump, even like he prior to running for president, I would argue that he was not that polarizing. He was kind of beloved by everybody. He was beloved by, he was featured in movies like Home Alone and many, many others. He's featured in rap songs, talked about in rap songs. So he was liked by the Black community, as far as I know. He's had a number one hit TV show, The Apprentice. And although he would do the whole You're Fired thing, and it was kind of a show and kind of aggressive in a way, but I don't remember anyone disliking him prior to running for president.
So the question becomes, why did he flip the script? He saw something. He might have known that, hey, that this nice guy, lovey, if you're looking at politics, wouldn't that be the route? Shake hands, kiss babies, nice guy, nice gal, lovey-dovey stuff. Like, wouldn't that be the route? But he saw something. He was like, nah, man, fuck all that shit. I'm going to come in and I'm going to appeal to a base that has nothing to do with my yuppie ass. I'm going to appeal to a base I'm totally different from on paper and have them eating out of my palms. He saw something and he leaned in.
That's an interesting point. I guess, maybe there's room for both. And depending on your risk tolerance or what you're trying to accomplish, you might be able to get by. Like, for example, a marketing agency, right? It's not, how polarizing can a marketing agency be? And maybe it can be. And maybe I'm looking at this all wrong. It seems like you want to try to attract as many clients to yourself as possible. You can market for anyone because the skill of marketing is not really it's not determined on industry necessarily. You could be an expert in a certain industry, of course, but are you suggesting that companies like marketing agencies should polarize themselves, should let the CEOs or founders' values be known and to really pick out your clients that way?
I don't know. It's it's a fine line, right? Because like you said, if Tiger Woods came out saying all types of crazy stuff, he wouldn't have got the endorsements he received. But let me give you an example of something that I wish I could do. Like if I was just solely in charge of the marketing agency that I have equity in here, if I was solely in charge of it, I wish that I could appeal, because we service mainly, home service contractors, plumbers, HVACs. I wish that we could put ads out that just appealed to the freaking raunchy, potty mouth plumber HVAC person, because Lord knows there's plenty of them. We have a different brand, so we can't do that. But I like all these plumbing ads I see and these HVAC ads and all this stuff and electricians. It's all happy, go lucky, smiling. Look at the truck. We're nice. We're affordable. We're local. You can trust us, blah, blah, blah. What if an HVAC company came out and say, you know what? We are stiff nipples AC repair. Our whole goal is to get your wife's nipples stiff because your house is cold. And then they have just some crazy ass like commercials where things are like just going for it. And it's going to piss some people off. Like, it's great. And then some other people are going to be freaking laughing and they're going to remember it. And then when they Google, when something happens to their AC unit and they Google AC repair near me and fucking stiff nipples comes up, they're going to choose stiff nipples over Chris Gray's HVAC and repair of Texas.
So what's stopping them from somebody from trying to do that?
That's a good question. I know what's stopping me. I have relationships that I care about, so I can't take our company in that direction, but I don't know why it's stopping people. I think the anti-branding play is a play. Yet it's scary, I guess, to your point, because there's a way of doing it. There's a way of doing it, and you're going to cross the line. It's only a matter of time, and it's going to cost you money. And that fear of loss, I think, is what it is. But why not, right? I think that you could still make a lot of money from that. I think, yeah, anyways.
I think that we've come to some kind of crossroads, effectively, is that it's a difference between, well, it's how high is your risk tolerance? Because if you don't have a high risk tolerance, you're conservative, then you have to play it conservatively and you're going to have conservative revenues. Like, let's say Subway has conservative revenues. If you then take what you have and are willing to risk it and willing for that to go to zero and polarize your messaging, you have a chance of maybe 10xing your business or going to zero. But you have to be willing to risk it, and then you have to be willing to have haters.
Absolutely. I don't want to go to the point of disgusting. There was a TikTok. So I was doing research on AC repair videos. There was this TikTok video, and it was funny. They used these two dogs, and the title of the TikTok video, like little headline of it, was "The customers forgot we were in the attic." And it had like one dog, and another dog, it said the, you know, HVAC technician. Another dog under him, it said apprentice. And they have these like crazy looking, you know, dogs look crazy, their eyes, and they look like so these dogs looking at each other, they're looking at each other with these crazy looks. And downstairs, the husband and the wife are arguing. You hear this audio and it is raunchy. Like, they're getting into an argument. And then she talks about how he enjoyed something very vulgar that she did to him the other night. And then he starts yelling like, "You weren't supposed to bring that up." And then these dogs looking at each other all crazy, like, what the, and it's very, very vulgar, right? Very profane. That shit had a million something views. A local HVAC company had the balls to put that out and got a million something views. Anti-branding.
But how were their sales?
Oh, hell, I don't know. I have no clue.
Yeah, it's a scary thing to do, I think, to be polarizing. I'm thinking about the clients that we serve on behalf of the clients of the agency, the customers that they serve, and I mean, some brands more than others, and depending on your industry, it's just a risky, risky move because, I mean, you don't know. Maybe there's some market research would be valuable here, because if it turns out that for that HVAC example, it turns out not 90% of customers would never want to hear anything like that. They would leave you a bad review just for hearing your ad, and it's going to drive your business to the ground. Or it could turn out that half the people actually really do want to hear something like that. They're looking for something different. And maybe in that case, it's worth the risk. In whatever small business you run, HVAC, restaurant, I mean, and local is a whole different ballgame than online or nationwide, different type of marketing. Local, you actually have a big advantage because you can relate, like we were talking about with Mattress Mac. He relates to that specific city. Houston. He's talking about Houston and that rap stuff. So
he said something that made me think of this. Let's go back to what we talked about, where we opened this up with. We opened it up with fast food chains and their branding and how they look. And if you look at your typical, let's say, McDonald's video, or McDonald's commercial, they might range depending on whatever their whatever the season is, whatever the marketing campaign is. But it's generally a corporate, happier type of marketing campaign. There was a burger place called Carl's Jr., whatever it is, like here in the Texas area. I have never ever had Carl's Jr. in my entire life, but they're around here in the Texas area, and I'm not sure wherever else. And they had these commercials, right? So you'd have this McDonald's commercial, and it might be family orientated, talking about some kind of Happy Meal campaign they had going on, right? And then the Carl's Jr. commercial come up, and it would be this woman, this hot woman in a bikini, everything fake with a hamburger that probably weighs more than her. Some skinny, hot woman, whatever, eating. And it was all sex. Sex with hamburgers. That sounded really weird. I didn't mean sex with hamburgers. I'm saying they're selling sex while they're selling hamburgers. So anyways, I wonder how that did. Like that was, I mean, that had to be polarizing. Your person who eats, your person who's eating Chick-fil-A, who's down with Chick-fil-A closing on a Sunday and not supporting gay stuff, then they see this commercial that's highly sexualized with a woman eating a hamburger. Bet they didn't feel the best about that or had the best things to say about it. But I wonder how that worked for Carl's Jr. That was a bit of a ballsy play, in my opinion.
That was a pretty ballsy commercial. I do remember what you're talking about. And I think they even did a Super Bowl ad. And yeah, it was really just selling burgers through sex, right? And I don't know how it did because they stopped running those commercials. So I would assume either they weren't allowed to run that anymore or it didn't work out. I've also never eaten at Carl's Jr. It's also apparently the same restaurant as Hardee's, depending on where you are in the country, called Hardee's or Carl's Jr. I don't know. It'd be interesting to get some more of these stats. But in the meantime here, I'm finding, I found this, a few examples, and they're saying, like, why does Coke beat Pepsi most of the time, even though both are huge companies? And like I think we talked about in an episode, Pepsi's actually catching up as a company. But when we're just talking about the actual Coca-Cola versus Pepsi-Cola, I think 8 times out of 10, people prefer Coke. And is that a marketing thing or is that an actual product thing? There's a bunch of like Wendy's, Where's the Beef? Budweiser's, What's Up? You could say are classic ads that actually worked.
Yeah, they did. Like that's the safe route. And when it lands, like the Bud Light, What's Up? That'll, if you're, you know, around that time and you remember, if you're old enough, that What's Up commercial is classic. You'll never forget that. So when it hits, it really hits. I just still lean towards the anti-branding. I wish Caesars would lean into it. Your pizza fucking sucks, Caesars, and you know it. That's shitty pizza. It's really cheap. It's not good at all. And they don't play off of quality ingredients. Their commercials are entertaining. They're entertaining enough. Like, I have to give them that. They do a pretty good job. What if they really leaned into it? Like, you know, the hot and ready. You know, is it good? It's hot and ready. Quality ingredients? It's hot and ready. Like, you know what? Just lean into it. Lean into it, man.
Oh, that is funny, but it's so risky.
Yeah.
And actually, speaking of the Budweiser and the Bud Light thing that blew up in their face in a big way, they went on a huge risk, so it seemed, at least from the outside. I don't know. Like they went on that risk with the transgender stuff, and they just absolutely got the wrong response. And that was they dumb. Fell. They dropped from the number one spot to who knows where they are now, 3 or something. Like they took the risk and it did not work.
What do you think of that move?
I can't picture that move being a profits driven move. I think that was a some kind of values, narrative, culture driven move that where somebody did it without revenues and profits being the number one goal.
I think that that's you got to know your audience too, right? So if you're going to anti-brand, like Chick-fil-A can anti-brand in the Chick-fil-A way, conservative values, you know, that type of stuff. They could do that because that's their audience. Chick-fil-A can't come out and say, "Hey, Dylan, whatever her name was that Budweiser picked." Chick-fil-A can't go out and hire her to do Chick-fil-A commercials because they will lose their base the same way Bud Light did. So, like, yeah, brand, anti-brand in whatever way is fitting towards your customer, towards your demographic. I think that Bud Light had to know. I mean, come on. It's not about the LGBT community isn't synonymous with Bud Light. you know, like I know gay guys love Celine Dion, or the ones that are my age used to, right? So then maybe you get Celine Dion, but you don't get Trump to be a mascot for that community.
That'd be a cool mashup. Celine Dion. Have you ever heard of that? These such funny mashups that happen on YouTube where they'll take clips from hundreds of different speeches of that Trump makes and kind of make a song out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty entertaining.
Okay. Yeah. So what it sounds like is like, you gotta take a stand, get your base. And once you have your base, you gotta stick with them. You're pretty much a slave to your base at that point.
Yes. Lean into it, man.
Okay. Well, I guess the, how do we apply, or how would you change any, or would you change anything about how you do marketing, whether it's for your agency or for your clients, or how would you recommend people with small businesses, whether they're local or online, if they don't have an established brand yet, they're still trying to get footing, what should they do?
It's exactly what you just said. It's, you know, you find your base and lean into it. If you're a marketing agency and you are getting clients, you look at your client, the owner, whoever you're talking to. Typically the base is going to mimic their values. Not always, right? But in a lot of cases, the client you hire or whatever is going to have a certain demographic. And then once you know that demographic, once you know their values, you can lean into that to the point of excluding people who don't agree. And that's exactly what you'd want to do. So I think it all comes down to, like, this is basic marketing stuff that we all forget. This is the fundamentals. These are shooting free throws over and over again, doing layups over and over again. In our case, it's knowing your avatar, or knowing your client's avatar. And once you know that, lean into it, really lean into it.
Yeah, we're probably not leaning nearly far enough in the marketing. Even if you think you're leaning, you're probably not leaning enough. If you're a local tax prepare company, and like, how really do you set yourself apart? It's kind of an interesting question. You know, like, you want people to come into your office, let's say, or at least give you a call on the phone. I was like, well, or you're an insurance agent, or you're a mortgage broker, any of these things that are very, like, people just shop price, right? They just, well, what's your rate? What, okay, I'm going to check other rates, and then I'm going to go with the cheapest. Unless you can get them to actually like you, and they'll be willing to pay a couple extra dollars to go with you.
One of the best examples, thank you for bringing that up, because it made me think of this example, lawyers. Often lawyers are going to do commercials and do billboards. If you drive to New Orleans, if you're driving through Louisiana, particularly the New Orleans area, coming to Texas, you're going to be peppered with these billboards of this lawyer. I don't know his name or his firm or whatever, but it's like, it's almost two per mile, or at least one per mile. At the very least, I mean, it's outrageous how many billboards this cat has. And it's him in a suit, regular looking dude, okay? But he peppers New Orleans with it. It's got to work. So I'm talking about it. I don't know who he is, but I know there's a ton of them, okay? Now, in Austin, when I'm driving to North Austin, to Pflugerville, where my mom lives, there's another lawyer. He's got dreadlocks. He's got a T-shirt. His name is something. The rock star lawyer. I'm calling that cat all day. Like, you know, got a Jamaican background. This dude looks like he's been in trouble with the law before himself and became a lawyer. Like, his billboard with his dreadlocks and his casual look and the way the copy on it, that I'm attracted to that more than I am the billboard of the guy in New Orleans. He's got a billion of them, but it's just a regular dude in a suit. I think that, to your point, if you're an accountant, or if you're a lawyer, or if you're working with those types, like, we all get that vision. I forget what it's called. I forget the technical term for it, where we just start to filter things out. It all looks the same. All lawyers wearing a suit looks the same. Then all of a sudden there's a lawyer with dreadlocks that stood out. Okay, that's marketing right there. It's getting people to stop, whether they're scrolling, whether they're driving, and ideally you don't want to like take your eye off the road too much, but if they just notice you while they're driving, that's a win. If they watch your commercial, that's a win. That's the whole point. In order to do that, you got to be different.
I think you just dropped several knowledge bombs on us. And number one, it sounds simple when I'm going to repeat it back, but I don't, like you're saying with the plumbing and HVAC and companies that you work with, they're too scared to even do this. But number one is you get somebody to stop. You have to get them to stop. Stop scrolling, stop whatever they're doing, take a peek. You have to get their attention first. Then you have to stand out. You have to be different. And you don't want to differentiate yourself on price, really, because then it's a race for the bot to the bottom, right?
Yep.
So get someone to stop. Identify yourself as different. Push away the people who don't relate to you, and then you attract people that do relate to you. It's interesting that you do say that you would call the dreadlocks guy, because just thinking about it from a perspective of somebody who's wanting a lawyer, like you're saying, that the one guy looks like a regular guy. Well, I guess he looks like a regular lawyer. When I'm picturing a lawyer, it's just like a guy in a suit, right? Somebody with dreadlocks typically I wouldn't picture as a lawyer. So that doesn't, why doesn't that dissuade you from being attracted to him? Like, maybe you can relate to him, but aren't you worried based on that look as well on the opposite side of it, that maybe the actual work may not be what you're looking for?
Not off the top of my head, because what that lawyer did was just in an ad establish potential likability. This is emotional. So there's no logical decision going on. There's no like, oh, I wonder what he got on his bar exam. And I wonder what, it's just like, yo, this was like a guy that I would have smoked a joint with back in the day. I think I might like him. Let me call him.
So you'd hire a lawyer that you would have smoked a joint with back in the day.
Yeah. Cause I can trust you. Cause if I'm smoking a joint with you, we're talking and we're having what we might perceive to be deep conversation, which might sound stupid to somebody who's not high, but when I'm with that type of person, there was a trust there. So if you remind me of that type of situation, then there's a likability factor happening. And okay, likability is what makes people, it's a purchasing factor.
That's so interesting, because I would be completely different. And this is a perfect example of how you're not going to appeal to everyone. And if you try to appeal to both you, Chris Gray, and me, Dimitri, you would get neither of us. If you're trying to get both of us, you would have to only get one of us. Because for me, when I'm picking a lawyer, I would be interested in the first questions that, now you may ask these too. You may ask the guy once you call him, but you called him, he's got his foot in the door now. So maybe that's a different point, but I would want to see the guy who has proven track record. And I would actually prefer the straight laced, never been in trouble, like just got straight A's in school, never smoked a joint guy to be my lawyer, or my mortgage broker for that matter. I just want you to be fully focused on the numbers and the task at hand. And I don't really even care that much whether I like you or not. So we're evaluating at a completely different level. And that's just, that goes to show how picking your audience is important in marketing.
Yes, exactly. Like it's that the hippie looking lawyer is going to repel you, and that's good for him. He's going to attract somebody like me who's like, yo, I like you, man. Let's just go lose a case together. Maybe, you know, like, yeah.
Huh. Yeah. I mean, we hired this hippie looking guy to be our wedding DJ. He had this big afro headband. As far as wedding DJ goes, he did a good job.
Well, good. Well, good.
I probably wouldn't hire the straight-laced guy to do that one. So, yeah, that's... Huh. I don't think, like, I can tell you for a fact, the company that I run, the agent marketing agency, the at least from what I can tell, I don't think we are doing a good job of picking our audience. Actually, we may be doing a good job for our clients, and I think actually we are doing, but if specifically marketing my agency to get more clients, I'm not sure that we are.
In our agency, you know, the guy who helped my business partner who founded it, you know, it's built on values that he's a very, very much part of, they are very important to him. And then he's done a good job of finding other companies that have similar values like that. And I have to give him, for the most part, I have to give him props for that. I have to give him props for that. But here's something else. I know that our episode's running a little longer. So the values of the company that I work for are very conservative. And so I'm very cognizant when I'm in those circles to respect that and respect that brand, right? It's business. And I also feel like, Dimitri, you tell me if I'm wrong. I feel like if, at least in Texas or just even across the nation overall, like Christian values is almost like a hack. Let me tell you why. I was researching just like we have these things called, you know, ad spies. There's literally the company I subscribe to is called Ad Spy, but you have all these ad spy softwares and you can research ads that ran on Facebook, Google, native that won historically. You can go back as far as they let you go back. And I just ran it open. Like I didn't have any specifications. I'm like, look, show me your top ads on Facebook since 2015. With no real specifications other than the top ads. And as I'm going through it, the top ads were either had something to do with Christianity. They were like a Christian funnel. At the end of the day, it was a Christian funnel or some kind of Christian quote or animals or babies. But it was Christian, 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 Christian. So it's almost like if you can lean into that in a lot of ways from a business perspective, it's almost like a hack. I don't know where I came up with this or why I'm even talking about it, but it's something I noticed earlier this week.
Yeah. And we were talking about Christianity on a previous episode and how people may not be living the values truly, but they could be borrowing the credibility by associating themselves as like, we're a Christian business or we're Christian founders. And that definitely works. It's even worked on me. I can tell you, I was looking for a mechanic couple years ago in a new area and I didn't know anybody in it. So this company they're like, we're Christian. Like, okay, I'll give them a shot because they're riding on the credibility. You know, mechanics are somebody that you need to trust. And then at the end of the story, I started going to a different mechanic because I think they were overcharging me. And there's another thing that experience actually what made a tiny dent in for Christianity. So like somebody representing it poorly, they were using the credibility and they took advantage of it.
Which hurts people like my business partner, or this cat's true Christian, bro, walks it like he talks it. Really, these are the true values. This is how the company is ran, you know? I respect the mess out of that. But now let's say he was in the mechanic business, you came to his shop and he's like, yeah, I'm Christian. And you had the experience you had with the prior Christian mechanic. You've already lost trust for him because it's been that reputation has been impacted. Yeah. But anyways.
Yeah. Well, all right. We can wrap it up now. And I think some of the biggest takeaways are well, first of all, more of a macro level is how do you want your brand to be perceived? Who do you want your base to be? You have to pick who you want your base to be. It can be related to you as the founder. It can, or you can just pick whatever base you want if you want to. It doesn't really have to be related to you. So pick your base and then lean into it. What am I missing?
You got it, man. That's it.
And then get attention, stand out, and then actually have a good product, of course. But we're not talking about that since we're talking about just the marketing side. Plenty of good marketing out there that had bad products that then kind of fell apart. And maybe that was Carl's Jr.'s downfall, or Hardee's, whatever they are. Maybe they just didn't have a good product. I also have never eaten there, so my guess is it's probably not good. That's my guess. It's not good.
Yeah.
Well, all right. That's our episode. So we'll see y'all later on the next one.
Peace.